This is CliffCentral.com. Download the Cliff Central app, available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
The Leadership Platform is brought to you by Sibanye Gold, a proudly South African mining company.
This is Leadership Transformation Platform. Started at 12 o'clock. It's now 2:30 and it's now Leadership in Education. Leadership where it really matters, in my view. Of course, we had our Leadership Masterclass 12 to 1, so all principals can listen to that. You know, we always have incredible conversations with experts and top leaders for the first hour, and then our Business Masterclass followed by the Leadership in Education. Barbara Dale-Jones, Bridge Project CEO, how are you doing?
Hi, Adrian, I'm well.
Anything happening? And Louis back in the studio, old man, he's been quiet today. We've got lots of talkers on the platform. Barbara, before you tell me if there's anything happening out there, and also our knowledge product, which we put together, which is really a summary of the last year of conversations and incredible discussions we had on this platform. Before we talk about that, last week, Mr. Kope Malatsi, principal of a school in Limpopo, St. Paul's Secondary, he's won awards for being a great leader in an under-resourced school, and that's a good podcast to download. I think you'll be inspired if you listen to that. Barbara, anything on the education front that we should be aware of?
Just to say that this week there's a dialogue for teachers, so principals out there, get your teachers to come to this. It's on the 24th of February at 4 o'clock at the Wits School of Education Staff Lounge, and it's focusing on the whole progression of teachers from matric through university into the profession of teaching and the issues and challenges and requirements of that. So it's a really important discussion for this country. We need to be getting more teachers into the profession, need to be increasing the sense of the value of that profession and its importance in South Africa. So come and join on the 24th of February at the Wits Staff Lounge at 4 o'clock.
Is that the day of the budget speech?
That's right.
Another important conversation for the country. All right. And just for everyone out there, we will be tweeting now and certainly in the future, and we have a few days ago, this knowledge product. It's a summary of the last year's shows with links and just incredible information on there. We've had brilliant principals on here. We've had deputy minister. We've had all sorts of individuals who shared knowledge and experience and advice, counsel. And then, of course, we heard from principals, successful principals. So do look out for that on the Bridge website. No doubt it's there. And we'll be tweeting it all the time.
And tweets are going out now if you follow at Bridge Project SA.
Okay. We have on the line Dr. Razia Ganshi Badasi. What a name. And for, I'm sure, very good reason, a principal of Brenthurst Primary School in Benoni, very involved in professional learning communities as a principal. And Barbara is going to take us through this conversation just so that principals out there can value from it. Welcome to our show.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And it's a pity you're not in the studio, but we make do, and we appreciate your time.
I appreciate being on the show. Thank you.
Hi, Dr. Badasi.
Hi, how are you, Barbara?
I'm good, thanks.
It's Razia. Most people call me Razia.
It's good to have you on the show again. I know you were on here last year. And perhaps if before we start talking, if I can just set the scene a little bit and say that the National Department of Education has emphasized the importance of professional learning communities and communities of practice of teachers. And you're a principal who's got it right. Now, I know there are lots of principals out there who are wanting to know, what are professional learning communities? How do you catalyze them in your own context? How do you sustain them? How do you make them meaningful? So that's the purpose of our discussion today, is to talk about that and to talk about how you've done it at Brenthurst Primary. So maybe start by talking about Brenthurst Primary as a school. It's in the Gauteng East District. What kind of school is it? What sort of learners do you have? And what are some of your common challenges?
Well, it's a primary school, and most of our learners come from Tsakani, Geluksdal, and even the local Brakpan children from less than affluent, if that's an okay word, circumstances. And I think that's not really the biggest predictor of success. The teachers also that came in initially were teachers that, though worked very hard, were not reaping the results, as I understood good results to be. So we had this lots of hard work going on, but not the results that we wanted. I knew these children could do better. I knew the teachers could do better. But it's just that we needed to change the way we thought about things.
So what made you look at the professional learning community as the kind of professional development space that you thought would make that difference?
Well, the teachers, in brainstorming what's going wrong at our school, they suggested that they wanted to teach grade 4 in a home-based context, which meant that at the time there were 8 subjects in grade 4, and every teacher wanted to teach all 8 subjects to one class. And I seriously doubted that a teacher would be competent in 8 subjects. But to meet the teachers halfway, I suggested to them that they could do that if we were prepared to learn from each other the subjects that I thought they were not going to be strong at. So we set up this collaboration time in school time where we created a division of labor where every teacher was given 2 subjects to plan. There were 4 teachers, 4 diverse teachers, may I add, diverse in career paths in many more ways than just race. And they had to each plan 2 subjects and then teach each other on those 2 subjects. Everything around the subject, the content, the teaching strategies, the assessment, what to do when there's a problem, how to teach projects, everything. It was something huge that we undertook at the time. You say 2010, 2009, we started with this. And what we found was my expectation was people would go into collaboration mode seamlessly. I thought they would come and they would say, yay, let's do this. This is what you do. This is how you do it. Stand up and teach each other. And as I indicated on the previous show, there was rather passivity. And that led me to believe that the teachers did not have the efficacy in the class and therefore did not have the self-esteem and the confidence to teach their peers. So it proved to me that a lot more work was required. Also, teachers were not holding each other accountable for lack of contribution when teachers did not bring their work to the planning meeting. There was no discussion of how to teach. There was just absolute passivity at the time. So there was, our work was cut out for us, definitely. We stuck to the program, though. And over time, I had to learn to build everybody's understanding of content knowledge, methodology, assessment practices, but most importantly, professional attitudes. We had to link a lot of our problems to the attitudes and the beliefs that we brought into the discussion. And some of them had a belief that they had no right to tell a teacher to give his or her work on time. Without looking at the impact on the class, they were more favoring the teacher's esteem and the teacher's well-being. Then there was no real, although the level head was a facilitator, the facilitator did not feel capacitated to hold people accountable for their contribution and participation to the group. And I had to then zoom in and to say, look, now we need to develop the role of the facilitator. We need to develop this idea of being respectful in our participation and in our contribution to the group. And we need to, all of us, grow up and start giving each other honest, constructive feedback on what is going down well and what is not going down well. Needless to say, it was a time-consuming process, and I attended every single professional learning group, which what we call a COP or POC at that time, and slowly worked with team members at grassroots level at the time. Now I only work with facilitators, but 4 years back I was working with the classroom teachers on the matter. Okay. And so many things needed to develop before we could actually get to the point where we start saying to each other, why are your results poor? Now we can say that openly.
All right, so there's an example of very engaged leadership, Adrian, a leader at the beginning involved in every step of the process, attending all of the meetings, making sure that the buy-in and commitment of staff was ensured through her own participation, and now she's managed to cascade it to the level that she only works with the facilitators. But I think that's an important leadership lesson.
Yeah, it is. You're right. I mean, that's leadership is multiplying, isn't it?
But before we go into some of the details of this, Razia, perhaps if you can just give us some of the concrete facts around what for you is a professional learning community, how many people, how often, how does the facilitation work, that sort of thing.
Yes, I do believe that you should have a group of 4 to 5 people engaged on a topic around teaching a specific subject in a specific grade. There mustn't be too many subjects that you're discussing. As we started off with the 8 subjects, that was way over the top. So 1 or 2 subjects with a few people meeting once a week, I would say. We work on a six-day cycle, so we meet once every 6 days. I think it's important. Frequent engagement is very important in building this esteem, also building trust and respect.
And do these meetings happen during class time or in the afternoons after school?
From the very outset, we did it in class. But now there's a change in my ISP, my senior phase, and unfortunately I've got to move it to after school. But what's happening is that they're collaborating on their own now. They're seeking each other out on their own. So in the initial phases, it's very important to have it within the school time. I would definitely say so. And then there must be goals that inform your discussion, the goals of what we want to achieve in this subject, in this grade. The goals can be qualitative in terms we want happy learners who are attending regularly, although attendance could be quantitative. But we also want quantitative analysis in terms of the academic results must be at a particular level in both internal assessments and where there is such, like common quarterly tests set by the district or even the ANA, there must be also good academic results in those external assessments. We also said that there must be a correlation between internal assessments and external assessments. There must be a correlation between rubric-based assessments and test-based assessments. This would give us some kind of indication that our standard is at the right pitch. The only time we allowed a deviation in the correlation was when we said our standard, the children's results in our test are allowed to be lower than in the external test, because that would prove to us that our standard was higher than the national standard, which was pretty cool for us. So those goals, pretty lofty, informed our engagement or must inform your engagement. If it doesn't, we're all going to be all over the place.
Okay, so not only engaged leadership, but with leadership here with a vision, leadership with a goal and an intention around improvement and excellence. So, Razia, you're saying small groups meeting frequently in facilitated conversations where there's a key focus and where there are very defined goals or outcomes that you're after.
Yes. I would say if a principal didn't want to go that far, the principal and the team can just say, listen, all we want to do is to make sure that the teacher is maximizing his time in the class, his or her time in the class. And then initially, if you could start the curriculum on 101, I call a collaboration curriculum. If you could start it at level 101 and not go to the levels of external exams and whatever, then you could just say, look, I just want to make sure every single week that every lesson is planned for as a basic start. Because trust me, if that is what you're starting with, your results will improve. And because this is the problem in most schools, teachers are not maximizing their contact time with the learners because they come into the class with not enough work planned or poor quality work planned, or they're simply avoiding the topics they don't know, avoiding skill areas they are not competent in, as in conducting investigations or undertaking project work in class. And it's so wonderful to collaborate because these things have got nowhere to go but to reveal themselves, and then the management has got nothing to do but to address it. What happens in the other school is that because it's not addressed, problems only surface at the end of the term when you see poor results and you want to now look back and try to determine what happened in every single class, which I believe is too late. So as a level one, just try and make sure in your collaboration that the teacher feels competent with the content, with the skills required in the curriculum, with the assessment practices required, whether it's a rubric, a project, oral writing, etc., whatever the subject dictates, and therefore guide the teacher in that collaboration with the skills facilitator, which in most schools will have to be a level head, a subject head, or an HOD if they don't want to spend any more money. And then just start with that step. Make sure that every lesson, every contact time with every learner is valued and has value outcomes. And I think then you're on your right track already.
Can I just quickly, it might be off the topic, but I'm talking exceptionally practically here. I get the impression sometimes, and just link it back for me, maybe you can do it with Barbara, that the kids, by the time they sit down in a classroom and they've taken their homework books out and they've checked their homework, it's time for the teacher to give the next batch of homework and to let the kids start doing the homework. And if that, what they don't finish, they take home. And no real lessons happen.
You see, the thing is, when teachers are very well prepared for the class, they create a sense of urgency in the class, such that taking out books, sitting down, all that routine, coming in, greeting, and whatever, handing out textbooks, however the classroom dynamics work, teachers have a greater sense of urgency in getting that done, because they've already planned wonderful, inspiring things that they feel must work, that takes priority over the routine administrative work. And also, those teachers would have a need for less homework, because the quality of engagement with the child in the class will do much to get their child learning. And thus, homework takes the place of the homework is just for reinforcing one or two examples rather than doing all the work at home.
Okay, that makes sense to me. So if I have that, I've planned, the PLCs are working, then I get into the class with a mission and a purpose, something that I want to share and convey to the kids, rather than using as an excuse how slowly they come in and unpack their books and their bags. And I get into this rhythm, I think, of literally just putting the kids on homework automation. You know? I really think this happens. I might be wrong, but I think it happens.
You know, and the thing is, the children start sensing the sense of urgency that has crept into these teachers in the grade, and they start getting galvanized into their own action. So you can see our children don't like it when the teacher's absent. They don't like it because they are not being engaged. And when we bring in new teachers, they can automatically see the difference between a teacher that has been involved in collaboration for a long time. They don't know that the teacher has been involved in collaboration for a long time, but they can see the output that that teacher expects from the lesson versus a teacher that is brand new. So that teacher comes in with sometimes, or more often than not, with a more calm, let's show what I call atmosphere.
So you're talking about the positive impact in schools, in the teaching and learning that takes place in schools, of professional learning communities. Can you also tell us what some of the challenges are or have been for you? So, for example, did you find that teachers were resistant to the idea of participating in these weekly meetings?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There were threats of resignations. There were tears. There were, we are expecting too much. We don't understand that the problems are the children's. We don't understand these children don't want to listen. These children don't want to do work. We don't understand that it's hard to tell a child to simplify the fraction 6 over 12 in grade 4. They don't understand the concept simplify. You know, there was a lot of things that they said to SMT, particularly me as a principal, that I don't understand what they are going through. And how hard is it for them to plan? How hard is it for them to teach? But a lot of things happened around in response to that. For one, I started planning with them at that time, showing them how to plan in bites, what I call bite-sized pieces. Don't plan too much. Plan enough. And if you get a solid concept done in half an hour, that is a lot more than throwing 50 concepts at a child at grade 4 level. Secondly, when you a teacher lesson, look for engagement with the children. You know, don't go in there with a carrot and stick mentality. Go in there with, like, I see you, I hear you, you hear me. We are engaging with each other. So at the time also we started to have a lot of lesson demonstrations springing up. I would demonstrate a lesson, HODs would, the deputy principal would, and then now at the beginning of this year we had a teacher demonstrate a scientific experimental lesson to the rest of the teachers. So we needed to respond to all those. There was in most groups you would have dominators. We had many hibernators in our groups, and we would have them have conversation that would center around every other thing except work, fundraising. Oh my word! What a child wore, the red sock that a child wore, something that any teacher was upset with, and they regarded it as a venting session above all else. I do think there's a place for venting. I think it shouldn't dominate any kind of professional learning engagement. And also there was a time when in certain groups where they were strived to build group solidarity that went against the positive school culture. And like I put it, I think they sought to overthrow the government of the day, which is me. And, you know, because that's what can happen in a collaboration. If you allow it to let loose, that group will solidify. They will grow. The emotional bonds and connections will deepen. Mm-hmm. But you want it to grow and develop and deepen around the core purpose of the school. You get people that are unwilling or incapable of giving honest, constructive feedback to their peers. I mentioned that.
Okay.
And of course, sorry?
Well, just we're running out of time, sadly, and this is a very important conversation to be having. But I just want to finally ask you to say, how important then is leadership in making these work?
Keep it very brief, yeah.
The leadership is critical, and you've got to have a stick with it principle. You know what collaboration can do, and you need to work quietly, painfully, patiently, however you want to describe it, with each of these factors that bring resistance. Slowly, role model what you need to do, confront what you need to do, hold people accountable, most of all. We got a formula from Fulan, E is equal to MCA2. The M is what is your motivation here. The C is what is your capacity. A, assistance. We will provide you with assistance. And the second A is you will be accountable in this space.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Dr. Badasi. We appreciate you joining us again on the show. All about these PLCs, professional learning. What is it?
Professional learning groups. Communities.
Communities, yeah. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you to everybody. Thanks a lot.
All the best out there in Benoni.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Barbara. That's good person. It'll be interesting to analyze that again.
Yeah, this is such an important topic for principals. Principals are being required to set up professional learning communities, and Razia Badasi is a principal who's getting it right. Mm. In a school where, you know, she said it's a primary school in Benoni, working with many learners coming from places like Tsakani Township. And in spite of the difficulties of her setting, she's running very successful professional learning communities. And I think this podcast is a good step-by-step guide how to do it.
How to do it.
Barbara, she's seeing results?
She's seeing results. We didn't have enough time to talk about the correlations there, but she's clearly seeing results. We're very interested in that school from Bridges side. They're part of a community of practice of ours, and their maths results are improving year on year.
The teacher's confidence also growing, which is so important as well.
Correct. Otherwise, kids feel it. That's it. Leadership Transformation Platform 12 to 3. That was a great conversation around PLCs in our Leadership and Education feature. We look forward to being with you next week, and have a great week, all the leaders out there. Keep creating movement.
This is CliffCentral.com.